So, what we've looked at this weekend really is, in many different ways, we've looked at the essence of Merlin. Because Merlin, in a certain sense, is the essence of magic, is the essence of working with the mysterious. Now, one of the key pieces that we've looked at, in different ways, really, through the whole of the weekend, is this name Anoki, which, to remind you, originally it comes out of ancient Egypt, and it's probably one of the, it's an ubiquitous word in ancient Egypt. You find it as far back as the Old Kingdom and the Middle Kingdom and the New Kingdom. It's the word to represent I am. And it's found really on all the cartouches of the kings and the pharaohs. It's also found in all the kind of the magical literature. And it's one of the very few words in Egyptian that actually gets transmitted directly into ancient Hebrew. It's very unusual for Egyptian words to travel into word travel into. Well, it's very unusual for an Egyptian loan word to be acknowledged as a loan word by the writers of the Torah and the rabbinical authorities. Partly because the whole myth of the chosen people is about their escape really from the evil polytheistic Egyptians who and the way God enabled them to escape from the Egyptians by sending plagues upon them and by opening the Red Sea and closing the Red Sea to drown them all. So to find, if you like, one of the profoundly magical words of an Egyptian tradition, also venerated as the one of the most important divine names in the Kabbalah and in the Torah is says that there's something very particular about this. And what we also find really is the is that because this it's like this name is the name that precedes the other names of the divine, the other kind of images, the other senses of possibility. And what we come back to the original hieroglyphics of Anoki. We have the idea of the shining waters from which everything arises. We have the reed leaf that comes into flower, which is the particularity that arises out of the wave-like immense potential of the waters. And then we have the weaving of a container that then holds the declared image of the god or the. And in ancient Egyptian tradition, a god has a very particular meaning. They give it a hieroglyph of a flagpole with a flag. So it's something that it's a god is a creative living image that is moved by the energy of the wind, the energy of the spirit, to have effect upon the world. And so all the gods and goddesses of ancient Egypt arise out of the shining waters of the Nun. But they have particular functions. So the god Atum-Ra or Amun-Ra, his function is to create. The goddess Sekhmet is the goddess of magic and healing. The goddess Hathor is the goddess of love. And so so these are images that have functions within the created cosmos. And the heart of Egyptian magic is the alignment with these deep principles, the principles of Anoki and the creation of the living image, which in ancient Egyptian also means the literal creation of an image, which is then brought to life and worked with as a living image in the community. Now this passes into the roots of Hebrew tradition as the word Anoki, similarly meaning I am, but having now similarly Hebrew is a hieroglyphic alphabet. And the letter, and it's made of four letters, Aleph, Nun, Kaf, Yud. Aleph, which means an ox, and is like the primary energy of the universe, but actually more deeply means it's the first letter of the alphabet. So it's and it has a kind of structure that's like almost, it's got a diagonal line, it's got a yod above and a yod below, and it kind of turns. It's very like the spiral star that we've been looking at in some of the images. And it represents the sense of infinity, the sense of all possibilities. The letter Nun, which represents the fish, is the life energy, the particularity that arises out of that infinity, which is held in the hand, the palm of the hand, which is the primordial cup. And that contains the yud, which is the seed of the living image. So the completely different looking symbolism, both the sound and the meaning of Anoki in Hebrew tradition and in ancient Egyptian tradition is identical. Now, on a much more direct level, just in terms of you and me, and to say I am is to assert our own existence. So we say, I am Ian, is to assert whatever is Ian. To say, I am sad, is to assert a condition of sadness that arises out of my existence and being. To say I am angry, to say I am joyful, to say I am happy. All of these things come out of the direct sense of being and the assertion of our existence. We can take it further. I am an angry person. I am an old boy who fell over in the Egyptian Museum to great embarrassment. Bloody did hurt myself, but not as badly as I could have. First day of our holiday, I travelled in midair, thinking, oh God, I hope I'm not going to get medevaced home. What, I've paid all this money for this holiday. It's amazing how much time you have to think when you're flying in midair. No, I was all right. Well, I wasn't all right. I was hurt, but I did manage to have a good holiday. But you know, so the nature of I am, right, and whatever is conjured up by that. So just in I am the old boy who flew through the air. It conjures up a reality, which we can all play with and enter into. But that's that's why it is the name before the other names. So if I say I Anoki Yud He Vav He, I say I am. So what that says, I am the creative energy that is manifesting everything. If I say Anoki Yud He Vav He Aloha Vada'at, I am the my existence is interwoven with the God that lives in my heart. I am Anoki Shaddai El Chai. I am the Almighty Living Power. I am connected. You see, so it's the I am takes us anywhere, everywhere. And this, in a certain sense, connects really with this ancient figure of Merlin, particularly in the most ancient figure of Merlin, who is the man from Maridunum, who is a shape-shifting figure, who manifests in different times, different places, who is the child, who is the mature warrior, who is the wise man in the forest, who spans a whole life. And in the prophecies of Merlin, we get this image, really, of him starting where they are and looking forward into the future, coming to the final apocalypse, the end of the universe and the withdrawal of the universe. Mm. So we have this sense of this being who is able to be himself and spread himself through time and space and shift his shape. And the important lesson of that is that we are Merlin. We have this capacity. And the key thing around all of this is to trust, in a way, our own particular expression of this. So in this process, in a sense, I suppose what we've looked at and what's interwoven back and forth really in this weekend are these Kabbalistic teachings around Anoki and the story of Merlin. So we've kind of woven that together. But what we've also done really is to take that dialogue more deeply. And in particular today, when we've looked at the archangels and looked at dialoguing with the archangels in a different way, what you start to see as the veils come off a bit is, having thought and experienced the archangels in one way, we then start to experience them much more deeply. And that sense of the archangels seeing us and meeting us and moving towards us and becoming not static, but dynamic, really starts to get us into a sense of a living relationship with these beings, who are profoundly courteous beings who will not intrude any further than we want them to. But like any relationship, a task in a certain sense is to just explore that, to enter the conversation, and see what happens when we let ourselves do that. The other thing we've just explored really is the return to this sense of the creation of Grail space, where we, as well as contacting, if you like, the great energies of the universe, the great archetypes, which is partly what we've been looking at when we look at these archetypal stories, is also looking at the connection. The spiritual connections in the seat that we're sitting in the table in front of us, in the chair that's here, the connections between us. Because one of the underneath principles, really, around this idea of conversation is the connection of each and all. And one of the images we continually return to is the idea of the circle whose center is everywhere and the circumference is nowhere. And one of the metaphors we've continually looked at this weekend is this quantum idea of the wave and the particle, and the idea of quantum entanglement. Again, this idea of profound connection. Now, the other thing we began with yesterday, when we touched into the whole the war that is happening around us. That is not something we've paid much attention to in this weekend, but because the profound entanglement of everything exists, as we do the work that we are doing, because we are entangled with each and every other thing that is happening, what we do here has effect everywhere. Now, our rational minds will find that hard to believe. Of course. But much of the work that we're doing here, and this is where this dipping beneath consciousness is such an important thing, has nothing to do with the surface of our minds. Much of the time, I am not talking to the rational part of you. Most of the time, I'm talking to another part of you. And when I presented the Merlin story in that more dreamlike way, which I haven't done much of that really, but the idea of doing it this time is to present that image into the part of you that understands the living image, which is the dreamer in you. As you return to by listening to the talks, listening to it, or even just if you just sit and have a quiet moment and think about what we've done today, this weekend, other things will occur because that dreaming part of the mind will be talking to you. But one of the effects of a week like this is I always end up throwing a lot at you because our time together is short. So we have to go for it. And then things unfold, and when we meet up in a, online in a month's time, things will have travelled. It's important to remember that the whole idea behind this is not to become an expert on Arthurian tradition. If you're interested in Arthurian tradition and you want to read about it, well, that's great. I like it myself. But nobody has to do that, because that isn't what we're looking at. What we're looking at is how do we more deeply enter into this more fluid sense of self, more deeply enter into this conversation which sustains the world. And as part of that, it's the practice really of trusting that deep conversation and dealing with our own particular issues, resistances, struggles around trusting it. That's always the thing that we have to return to. Now, we've done a lot of meditation this weekend, perhaps a little bit more than usual already, and I've done less explanation. But in a way that's kind of appropriate to the subject, of this quicksilver figure of Merlin, who people are always trying to tie down. There's a huge academic literature around Merlin. And he slips out from under. It's a bit like, you know, in the Geoffrey of Monmouth story, he slips off to become a man of the woods, and he tries to tie him down in the city, and he finds ways to break out, and he continually breaking out and continually. I think it's the kind of Merlin you get in Geoffrey of Monmouth as well is this, not the all-wise magician, but the person who is actually sort of quite disorderly and quite doesn't quite know why he's doing things, but he's doing things, and he's killing lovers and running away and coming back and catching, you know, betraying his sister and prophetically seeing powerful things. And one of the pieces that's probably important just to return to briefly is the image of the threefold death that's in the middle of the Geoffrey of Monmouth story. The boy who is a girl, who is also a boy, who dies from falling from a height, hanging from a tree, drowning in a stream. Now this is a very, very, at one level it can remind us of the hanged man of the tarot card. Tarot card of the hanged man, I'm losing my words. It also can remind us of the triple death you find in Celtic society. But if we just look at it for a moment, it represents an inversion, a falling down, a hanging upside down, an immersion in the deep waters. And that's that little moment in that, I mean, the whole history of the Vita Merlini is full of these speaking kind of images that if we're interested, we can investigate and become curious about. Sorry, can you say a bit more about that?
Well, when we were in that sort of dream meditation, I felt like all the characters were different aspects of mine.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, completely.
So the prediction of the child, the shapeshifty child, gender shapeshifty child, seem to be about him.
Yes, and in some of the northern traditions around Merlin, the traditions around somebody called Leilucen, who's another wild man, he dies a threefold death. Mm-hmm. So so in a certain sense, these are all about this shape description. All the stories and the images are about this shape shifting figure, mm-hmm. who's turning up in all kinds of places. There you go. Oddly, some of those images turn up in C.S. Lewis's, not C.S. Lewis, T.S. Eliot's Wasteland, where he talks about the drowned sailor and the hanged man. And he's making a very oblique reference to the Geoffrey of Monmouth story when he does that.
And it's the connection with
Christ as well. And absolutely the connection with Christ and Christ's crucifixion.
That was
Jesus, that is to Saint Peter. So he says to Saint Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny me thrice.
The cock crows.
Jesus says to Saint Peter that before the cock crows, ever before the morning, because Peter has those protestations of loyalty to Jesus just before Jesus gets arrested. Jesus says to him, before the cock crow, before morning, you will deny me three times.
Not very good for the book of the church, is it? Not very human.
Petros, on this rock I shall build my church. Well, stop. I was nearly about to launch and give you something else that's very interesting, but I don't think you need.
Yeah, well, go on.
I don't think you certainly don't need it right now.
You can tell
you
later.
I can definitely tell you later, but it's in the. It relates to the idea of Christ the Messiah in the Book of Isaiah. Trust me, you don't want to know about it right now.
I'm right enough.
Okay. And read about it when I finish the book. And the next three year course will be based on it. But until I'm thinking ahead, you understand. Right, where am I?
I can talk
about here now.
Say again.
Well, it's the same. So, if we think of Ramana Maharshi, if we think of God, what's his name? What's the name of your guru? Nisadatta Maharaj. So what you also get really from the Advaitin traditions is this idea also of I am that, which is that's the I amness turned backwards into the divine. You know, so it's the what Ramana Maharshi does and what the Advaitin masters do is to ask us to examine the experience of I am and to return that back to the source of I am. And it's the same energy moving in a different direction. So when we do I am this, our energy moves out. When we do I am that, we are returning into the other substance, the other side of the dialogue, and then we come out again into that. Anything I've left out? Anything anybody's left?
We nearly left Afternoon Delight off the playlist.
We don't want to do that. Afternoon Delight is a wonderful, wonderful. Oh, Peaky Blinders, Red Right Hand.
I'm re-watching Peaky Blinders. I've watched it this morning. I've re-watched it first time for years. It's so good. But Red Right Hand.
Yeah, I fancy re-watching it because there's a new film coming out about it as well. Yeah, so yeah. I thought I might re-watch it before I watch the film.
The Immortal Man.
Yeah.
Really good. I've just finished season two this morning before I came here. Full of Peaky Blinders. Red Right Hand. I mean, it's a bit daft, but it is good.
Oh, it's lovely. I really like it.
It's lovely.
I don't know whether it's lovely.
Gangsters do the most horrendous things.
But it's very human. It's very human. There's something very there's something very, very touching about the character of Tommy in it, and sort of in there.
I love his connection with gypsy culture. Really, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it's done so well.
But also, you see, you're also in that. I don't know why I've been on about this, Benny. I will. All seers see the damage the war did, the First World War. Yeah. So these traumatized men that then return to a country that because they're working class people doesn't give a shit about them. Mm. And they find their own way, I suppose. Mm. Anyway, don't look on about it.
There's something about him, and it's in Oppenheimer as well.
He does. Well, actually, given what we're talking about, interestingly, he really has a capacity, and I think great actors do have this capacity, because what they do is they arise from their own sense of I am-ness. Mm. And they create the living image of the character they are portraying. Mm. And I think when a great actor or actress does that, you feel it. It's so palpable, whatever they play. So whether it's in Oppenheimer or Peaky Blinders, you feel that real sense of presence coming through.
Hard to believe that it's... I mean, we know it's Cillian Murphy, but
it's
Tommy Shelby, Robert Oppenheimer.
Yeah, just they're different beings, aren't they?
I watched Richard Harris come on stage once in the theatre, and as he came on, he was the absolute focal point of the attention. And as he came on, he wasn't even saying much. It's so extraordinary, you could really, really cast that spell.
It's shape-shifting.
Okay, enough. Let's just pause, and we'll just thank the Archangels, and then finish. And we'll meet online in a month's time. But just come back into yourselves. Just be aware of the effect of the weekend upon you. And in particular, come back to that sense of Anoki I am. And noticing, as you focus on I am, noticing what emerges for you, how you are. And be aware of us all sitting together around the flame. And be aware of the archangels. Recalling that as you notice them, they notice you. Being aware of the shining one at the center and the deep mother that holds them. So turning to Savuviel. Savuviel, Quicksilver Angel, Keeper of the Web of Exchange, we thank you. Go in peace. Auriel, Alchemical Angel, go in peace. Gabrielle, irrigate and strengthen us, and go in peace. Mikael, enlighten us and go in peace. Raphael, enliven us and go in peace. Yeshua, Miriam, exemplars, companions, teachers of the deep mystery of what it is to be a human being. Bless us in our days and in our nights, in our hard times and in our blessed times. Show us the ever-deepening way. Go in peace. May we all go in peace.